This is the episode you send to somebody who's having tension at work. Welcome to the Business Made Simple podcast, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. I am your host, Donald Miller. Today, I want to talk about the stories that you are telling yourself. If there's some frustration in your life as a leader, as a mom, as a dad, as a husband, whatever, it is probably because there are narratives that you are subscribing to, and chances are those stories are not true. And what I mean by that is the story might be worse, the story might be better, the story might be non-existent, but chances are the thing that is making you frustrated is largely fiction. And today we're going to talk to my old friend, Michael Bungay Stanier. Michael is the author of The Coaching Habit and How to Work with Almost Anybody. He's really a sort of relationship expert and has dialed in and focused in on relationships in the workplace. We're going to talk to Michael later in this episode, and we're going to answer some questions from you, from the audience, about some tension that you've got in your workplace. And Michael is going to bring us some insight on that tension. So we're going to talk a little bit about emotional intelligence, how to deal with our feelings, how to deal with conflict in the workplace, some psychological tools to help you navigate tension coming up on this episode of the Business Made Simple podcast. If you are a startup with big growth dreams, then you need a CRM that can keep up. From marketing and sales to support and content and everything in between, HubSpot's all-in-one customer platform has startups covered. And with the HubSpot for Startups program, you can save 30 to 90% on a platform that scales right along with you. Increase leads, boost revenue, and improve your customer experience. HubSpot for Startups helps you do it all. Plus, they offer 24/7 customer support and integrations with more than 1,500 of today's most popular apps. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, their constantly evolving collection of resources and articles created specifically to help startups scale. HubSpot is trusted by some of the most successful startups and more than 100,000 companies around the world. To see if you are eligible to join the HubSpot for Startups program and take your growth to the next level, visit HubSpot.com/startups. You wrote The Coaching Habit, and now you've got the How to Work with Almost Anybody, and people are talking more and more about people problems, and they're opening up, even in a vulnerable way, about their deficiencies and sort of getting along with people, working with teams, all that stuff. I mean, people used to not talk about that. And now I think it's a strength, by the way, that we're talking about it, we're figuring out that everybody's a human being. And you have been the guy, one of probably few, Brené Brown, Daniel Goleman, emotional intelligence, those guys. You're one of the, you know, top three, four guys who are really helping us understand human beings.
Well, I'm not sure about putting me in one of those top three or four positions. You're making me blush, but no, I'm thank you. But certainly, you know, I've worked for 30 or 40 years. I try and do great work, but the more I realize it is like work happens through people. And I've had my fair share of being a terrible manager and also having terrible managers and leaders around me. And so I've got two things going on, Don. One is, look, I want people to have good day-to-day working experiences. But I also think that work is this opportunity to unlock greatness. You know, the best of work is it's not just about getting the work done, but it's about bringing forth the next best version of who you are. It's a place to grow and to learn and to evolve. And I think work often takes you in the opposite direction. It kind of shuts you down and makes you a bit kind of commodified, a bit of a cog in a machine. And I'd love more people to be going, how do we not only do great work and serve the world? How do we not only make a good living, but how do we also grow and evolve and be the best versions of who we can be?
It feels like that's in line with the meaning of the universe in some ways, right? I mean, you know, I became a dad fairly late. I was 49 when I became a dad. And it has been sort of like philosophically, existentially amazing to watch. You know, of course, you're obsessed with your kids. You're madly in love with them. But there's also this sense of, wow, she is not the same person she was last Thursday. I mean, she's saying different things. And then I wondered, why do we assume that that stops when you hit 30? You know, it gave me a lot of comfort to say, hey, at 52, I actually don't have to be the same guy that I will be at 53. I can keep growing and I can keep changing. Have you sort of tapped into that mentality?
I think that's absolutely right. And in fact, there's good research that talks about this kind of different plateaus of adult learning and adult development. You know, it's a classic S-curve. You start off, then you have this surge of growth. And then at a certain point, you plateau and you kind of like can get comfortable. And you always have a choice. It's the same. I mean, you see the same in a business as well. You know, you get your business to a certain point and you're like, oh, this is comfortable. But then to go beyond it, all the systems melt, everything breaks down, and then you have to rethink it again and kind of reinvent it.
Yeah.
And just like you have an opportunity when you, say, hit $2 million or $5 million revenue in your business to go, do we go to the next level or do we stay comfortable? I think the same is true as a human being, which is like you get to this position, you know, where you're 49 or you're 59 or you're 39 and you go, well, this is great. I've got some degree of mastery. Is this it? Have I finished growing and evolving? Or do I want to go, what's the next version of who I might be and how I might serve the world?
I love that. I'm driven by that. Then the next question, and you've helped a ton of people through this, is how do we as leaders foster an environment where people can become the next best version of themselves? How do we not stifle people's personal growth? I'm curious. We're going to answer questions, by the way, because we've told our listeners that you're coming on. Oh, so Bobby, our incredible producer, has handpicked some questions. But before we get to the actual, you know, some of the questions, are there some characteristics of leaders who better foster these environments, which, by the way, lead to productivity? It's not that this is all about emotional health and emotional safety. It's also about accomplishing your objectives. Are there some characteristics of leaders that you found are better coaching kinds of leaders than others? I'm sure you have.
Well, I think there's a few things that come to mind. One is somebody who understands the dance between safety and vitality.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've really learned over the last 10 years, Amy Edmondson probably has been key in popularizing this, is that psychological safety actually matters. It actually helps people show up and be the best version of themselves and bring all they can do. Mm. But I also think that psychological safety isn't the be all and end all. It's necessary, but not sufficient. Like, I've had psychologically safe working relationships before and they've been fine, but they've been a bit boring at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I also want vitality. Vitality meaning kind of life. I want to be pushed. I want to be provoked. I want to be challenged. I want to step out to the edge of myself and who I know and what I know and my competence and my confidence. I need that as well, because it's that dance between safety and growth that allows people to grow. So you have to have a leader that understands that.
Hmm.
I think you need to have a leader, I'm talking to everybody here, which is like having the ability to build an environment that allows people to flourish is you have to know how to repair damaged relationships, because it all goes off the rails at some stage. There's never been a good working relationship that hasn't had a hiccup or a misunderstanding or a disappointment. And many of us are not that great at going, all right, that was a letdown. How do I go back and try and make this better than it was, or kind of get back to where we were?
Yeah.
And then there's this other driver of being an effective leader, Don, and it's about the power of curiosity. You know, many of us as leaders are driven by this need to kind of prove that we know it all, or we can save it all, or that we can control it all. And, you know, if you go back in the literature, this idea of servant leadership, written by a guy called Robert Greenleaf, it's a book from the 70s, I think, or the 80s. But this idea that you are in service to the people, and one of the most powerful characteristics of this servant leadership mentality can be, can I stay curious a little bit longer? Can I rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly to allow people to maintain ownership of the stuff that's theirs to own, to help figure some stuff out, to help them make their own connections, to help them figure out their own kind of what this is the challenge that I should be working on? If you can stay curious, that's really a leadership superpower, I think.
Gosh, all this sounds so good. All right. Well, you know, if you want to read more about what Michael Stanier is talking about, he's got a few great books. One is The Coaching Habit, which has been a very high-selling book for a really long time, 5 or 6 years now. And then How to Work with Almost Anyone, 5 Questions for Building the Best Possible Relationships. I found that your material translates just as well at home. Basically, you want to think of Michael as the guy, if you want to get better at relationships, and building rapport and building connections and making your places psychologically safe. I think he's a great go-to thought leader for that. With that, though, Bobby, I'm going to stop monopolizing this conversation. People do not pay
the
enormous amount of money they pay to listen to this podcast to hear me ask questions.
Don, you are stroking my fragile male ego in a wonderful way. I forget the questions. Just keep talking about how wonderful I am.
Okay. So, Bobby, you got anything?
We've got some great questions, and they're all rooted in exactly what you guys were laying the foundation for just in this conversation leading up to this. This first question from Samantha, who is the owner of a boutique marketing agency out of Georgia. And Samantha is saying and asking, I manage and work with my team remotely. And since right before the holidays, so this sounds super recent, our team interactions have just felt awkward. For instance, team meetings have become less interactive. People are hesitating to share ideas openly. I've even noticed some tension during discussions. This isn't anything that I've directly addressed yet, and I'm curious how to get everyone together and bring up this issue while also creating a space that feels safe for them to enter into the conversation. How should she? Unspoken stuff going on. Yeah, there's a lot here.
We've all had this. People aren't talking to each other,
and you don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why.
You know, the first place I would go, Don, is I would try and understand what's going on and how much of it I'm making up. We have this large capacity to create patterns, create diagnostics of a situation, which may or may not be true. So I have a model that I use for this that I find pretty helpful. I use it as a way of preparing for feedback, but often just to try and get my own emotional stuff out of an analysis of a situation. It's got its roots in nonviolent communication.
Yeah.
And it says this, everything falls into one of four different buckets. It's either data, feelings, judgments, and then wants and needs. Those are your four elements. So data are the facts. It's what you might think you could take into a court of law and say, this is evidence. You know, it's stuff that you know to be true. Feelings, kind of like your response to that situation. And, you know, Brené Brown has a book of 72 feelings, which I can't quite remember. But I have five core ones that I tend to use. Mad, sad, glad, ashamed, and afraid. And I'm like, okay, so what's my mix of feelings and all of that? Then there are judgments. And so judgments are your interpretation or your opinion about what's going on in terms of the data and the feelings. And you have judgments about three different areas. You have judgments about the other people. Oh, they're disconnected. Oh, they don't like it anymore. Oh, there's a coup brewing. Oh, there's rivalry brewing. You've got all sorts of interpretations of them. There's judgments about yourself. Oh, I've lost control. Oh, I'm not being a good leader. Oh, they don't like me anymore. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing at trying to run my boutique marketing company. And then there's judgments about the situation overall. I should never have hired people. Having a small team is a terrible idea. I should have just kept being a solopreneur. You know, you can have all sorts of judgments around that. And then there's what do you want or what do you need, which is like, what's the thing I'm trying to resolve around this? And the first thing I would possibly suggest to Samantha is she kind of gets the stuff out of her head, which is currently an unholy cocktail of all of that stuff blended together, and kind of distill it into those four different buckets. And here's what you're going to find. Far less data than you think.
Yeah, or none.
But there's probably some, because there's probably a thing somebody said in a call. That's a piece of data. But there's always less data. There's always this vast, overwhelming amount of judgments, because we're good at that as human beings. We make all this stuff up. It's often connected to a feeling. I feel anxious because blah, blah, blah. There's dissension in the ranks. That's a feeling judgment combination. And then there's this a deeper question, or it's like, so what do I want here? What do I need here? And once you have that, it's going to calm you down a little bit. And it's also going to start opening up avenues around how you might act. Because it might be that you need to pull everybody together, or it might be that you want to pull one person aside and have a quick conversation with them. Or it might be that you want to just check in your reality with one other person on the team and going, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Yeah.
All of these are possibilities for you. But until you've oriented to kind of going, what's really going on, it's hard to always know how to act.
Talking Too Loud, hosted by Chris Savage, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. On each episode of Talking Too Loud, Wistia CEO and self-proclaimed loud talker Chris Savage takes you inside the minds of entrepreneurs as they share the hilarious, informative, and most challenging aspects of building more human brands. On a recent episode titled The Many Benefits of Inclusive Marketing with Sonia Thompson, Chris chats with Sonia about what you can start doing right now to help customers feel more seen, valued, and understood when engaging with your brand. You will also learn why inclusive marketing matters, how it's shaping customer-led growth, and what it looks like when it's actually done right. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you get your podcasts. And now, back to the show. Hey, Michael, tell me if this is wise. I've done something in the last couple of years that has been helpful for me. I think it's been helpful for the other people I've talked to about it. But when I'm starting to get frustrated about a situation, a dynamic, or even a relationship sometimes, I realize, Donald Miller, you are telling yourself a story without doing due diligence to find out whether or not that story is true. So let me give you an example. So, gosh, the other day I was hanging out with some folks and I made a joke. It wasn't at all an inappropriate joke. It was just kind of a funny joke. And about 48 hours later, that same group was kind of hanging out. And publicly, one of the guys said, I hate it when people make jokes about this topic. And I had made a joke 48 hours later in front of those folks. So for about 3 or 4 days, I was like, why wouldn't he just come to me and say, hey, that joke kind of offends me and here's why. And I got a personal message.
Yeah.
So instead of that, though, I wait a second. You're telling yourself a story here that this guy passive aggressively brought you up. So I actually went to him. I said, hey, pulled him aside. I said, hey, I'm telling myself a story. I want to find out if it's true. The other day when I made that joke, were you there? And he goes, no, I didn't know you made that joke. It wasn't even there.
I love it.
And I said, okay, well, I made this joke, but I didn't mean anything by it. And he goes, oh, no, I didn't even hear you make that joke. But, so this whole time I'm making up a story that would have, would have caused maybe a splinter in a relationship. This is very mild. It wouldn't have caused that. But, and I checked it out. Is there a good intuition that I'm working on there? And, as somebody who's dealt with so many of these situations, like what's good about that or what do I need to be aware of if I'm using that tactic? Or if Samantha's using that tactic with her team, right?
Yeah. There's two levels of wisdom there I see, Don, more, but let me pick up on two. One is that very specific phrase you used. I'm telling myself a story and I just want to find out whether it's true. What's brilliant about that is, A, it is a way of you kind of untangling yourself from the drama, because that's what happens. You've got this little switch, which is like, do I get sucked into the drama of the situation or do I get to stay outside the drama? In some ways, emotional intelligence is learning how to stay outside the drama. Secondly, it's a way of having that conversation with the other person that allows both of you to kind of talk about it in a way that neither of you will lose face. Because so often what happens in that kind of moment where you go back and check is you put it in a way that gets them defensive, which then gets you defensive, which then gets them super defensive. And suddenly you're like, you're entangled in this thing and you're not even sure why.
Don't parts of your brain shut down when you get defensive? Like don't even allow you.
Your little amygdala just kind of goes, I'm taking over your entire body now. and your lizard is going fight or flight or faint. You're just not thinking rationally anymore. You've literally stopped breathing, because that's what happens in stress. Your shoulders go up, you stop breathing, you literally oxygen drains from your brain and you just become dumb. And so what's beautiful about I'm telling myself a story, let me just check out if it's true, is whether he says yes or no, everybody's fine. he could have said, yeah, actually, you did say that. And you're like, okay, so it's a story I'm telling myself and neither of you are losing face. So it's a beautiful way of presenting that.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. Anything I need to, that everybody listening, because now we're all going to go do that. Is there anything that we need to be careful about in terms of that? Because it's a mild form of confrontation in a way. Yeah. You're sort of being the Sherlock Holmes walking into the room, trying to figure out what's true, what's not true.
Yeah. The well kind of researched insight around this is do all you can to own your statements. I'm telling myself a story. So it's about I do this, I'm feeling that, not you are and you did this and you therefore think that.
Yeah.
And the more you can make it about this is me, this is my lived experience, I'm just checking whether my reality kind of connects with your reality at all and whether that means anything, means that it's less likely to be triggering for people. I've got one other quick framework that might be helpful here, Don.
For Samantha especially, yeah.
Yeah. So it is the Karpman Drama Triangle.
Yeah,
I love this tool. It's got its roots in something called transactional analysis, which kind of gives us the language of parent-child relationships and adult-to-adult relationships. So that's therapeutic language that doesn't really work in business context. But the Drama Triangle says that when things get dysfunctional, three roles play out: the victim, the persecutor, and the rescuer. And to be clear, they're all equally dysfunctional. Rescuer sounds like a more helpful role, but it's not. It's just as broken as the first two. And so you can kind of bring to mind what those roles are, what somebody playing the victim role looks like, somebody playing the persecutor or the bully role, somebody playing the rescuer role. What you need to know is that when you're triggered into the drama triangle, and you're acting in one of those three roles, this is not you at your best. You know, you're either whining and complaining and waiting to be rescued. You're either in kind of finger waggling mode or maybe micromanager mode, or you're in kind of self-sacrifice martyr mode, which is the kind of what shows up for the rescuer. And so one of the things that I'd be interested for Samantha to reflect on is to go, in this situation, which I promise you has triggered you into the drama triangle, what role do you see you playing there? What role do you see the other situation or the other people playing? And what does that tell you about how you're triggered to behave and how you want to behave? And how are those different?
How would she, if she's just noticing this is happening on her staff, which one is she playing most?
She's gone, I'm noticing this dysfunction in my team. Who knows how that triggers her? She could move into persecutor mode. So right. She's like, I'm going to call them up and going to get angry at them, or kind of pass, you know, kind of that sort of angry at them, or get micromanagery about them. That's a persecutor role. Or she could be like, I'm just going to go and talk to my coach and complain and whine and go, it's so hard. Nobody appreciates me. I'm trying so hard to run this company and it's so unfair and they don't even like me. And they don't even
understand
how much I've given them.
Why do I have to be everybody's mom or dad or therapist? It's not my job.
Exactly.
That's Victor.
Or she's like, oh, you know what? Poor things. They must be worried. So I'm going to try and make them all feel better. And I'm not going to bring it up. And I'm going to try and soothe it over. And give me more work to do. And let me be responsible for making everybody cheerful. She may be triggered in any one of those three roles.
How do you not do that, though? It seems like those are the only three options in terms of an emotional reaction to any given situation.
Don, when you say, I'm telling myself a story, you're out of the drama triangle. Because you're not in that reactive moment. You're in a place of curiosity.
Almost research.
Which is what we talked about. Yeah, you're like, I'm curious. And when you're in a place of curiosity, when you're asking good questions, that's likely to be pulling you out of the drama triangle.
That's interesting. So one of the things she could do is just go to different members of her team or just say, hey, guys, I'm telling myself a story that we're not connecting like we used to. Is that true? And if so, does anybody have any thoughts on why?
Yeah. Now, what I would do is I'd make... This is now kind of facilitation approach. So the challenge is if you got her and let's say her five people on her team, if she's holding a Zoom meeting and she just puts that out there, there's a lot at risk for people to speak up and sort of say, actually, yes, or even actually no. So now you're going, how do I make this feel safe and easy for people to tell me what's really going on? So you've got some options. One is you do all of this on one-to-one meetings on the side. You're like, hey, Don, just checking in. Are you noticing this? Am I feeling this? Am I getting this wrong? What guidance would you give me? Or you could say, look, let's do a Zoom meeting, but I've got a question. I'm going to get you into groups of two or groups of three for you to have a little conversation, and then we'll come back and we'll debrief what we're seeing and what we're noticing. So you're using facilitator techniques to make it less risk for people to be courageous and speak up about what's going on.
Oh, I love it. Okay, Bobby, you got another question?
We do. So our next question comes from James, who is a sales rep at a tech startup in Chicago. James is asking, I've been facing challenges nurturing a crucial prospect, and it seems like I've hit a roadblock in their lack of responsiveness anytime I ask about taking the next step towards this sale. They haven't gone MIA and are completely on board each time we lock in a time to talk, but I want to build a stronger connection and keep the conversation flowing smoothly. How can I overcome this challenge that I'm facing and nurture this prospect without seeming overbearing or pushy. Sounds like what James wants to do is kind of really, really go in for the sale, but isn't quite sure when he can find that time to do it and doesn't want to feel overbearing.
That's tricky because with sales, you're like, there's always a clock ticking in the back of your head going, you know, I kind of need to close this deal. My boss and my boss's boss are looking at my numbers and I'm looking at my numbers and I want to get this thing closed by, you know, end of month or end of quarter or whatever it might be. And what I'm hearing, Bobby, from the way you've set up this problem is that, look, they haven't disappeared. They haven't ghosted you because, you know, people can do that.
Right.
And, you know, from my own research, it's clear that the very art of selling has changed, you know, in the last 5 years. You know, people do most of the selling digitally. You know, they have that experience through your website and that experience, and then they come to you to kind of figure it out and close out the final details. So even that world is shifting. But one of the things that I would think about here, this might not work, but let me throw it out there, which is I often try and speak to what's going on rather than trying to figure it out in the moment. So you could say, hey, prospect, I feel this is a really promising conversation and I feel we're getting somewhere. But also when we get to a certain point, it all kind of gets a bit stuck. Or you kind of go, oh, I'm not quite ready to go ahead. And of course, I'd love to go ahead because that's my job. I'm trying to make a sale. And I also don't want to kind of pressure you or kind of be a sleazy salesperson around this. I'm just curious, is there something that's kind of causing the block here? And is there anything I could be doing differently or more helpfully that would help you move past it so we could either get to a yes for the sale or even a clear no for the sale?
Yeah.
Wow.
Again, just asking those questions of where are you at and what's going on in your life and what's going on in the situation you're in,
right?
Almost so you can fill in the gaps on stories there. I will say
exactly.
This, you know, when I think about sales, I often think less about what's worked for me to close a deal, although it's true for that too. But why did I buy from that person? Why did I do that? And almost every time, there was an attempt to build the relationship before the sale ever happened.
Right.
There was a sense of, let me get to know you. And it was also, that's one, their intent was to get to know me and figure out what's going on in my story. And then the second one is there were probably two or three engagements before any sort of sales thing was ever brought up. In other words, there was an initial meeting, initial building the relationship, then a secondary follow-up, then a third. Mm-hmm. And it's really on the fourth that I was almost saying, hey, I know you got this thing. Can I buy it? You know, but there was, I think it's natural that there was, that the trust was actually built. And I wonder maybe if this is a big sale, you know, if this is a big multi-million-dollar thing, I think there's just some relationship building stuff that has to happen there. James, you know, continue to build that relationship because you just know where it's at. And I do think,
James,
I think it takes some time. Yeah.
I mean, again, James, go back to that nonviolent communication model, which is what's the data that actually happening and what are the feelings and judgments you've got around this? What have you made up? In Don's words, what story have you started telling yourself about what's going on? And then go back and you could use exactly Don's phrase. Hey, prospect, I'm telling myself a story about why we get stuck in this part of the conversation around the sales. And I just wanted to check out whether the story's true or not.
Yeah.
You could use that exact phrasing, and it's a very curious relationship forward way of actually checking that out.
Yeah. Bobby, I think we've got time for one more.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's pick a good one.
So here's one. So this last question deals with it seems like this person's in what seems like kind of direct conflict or in conflict with somebody.
Okay.
This is from Alex, who is a project manager out in Seattle. And Alex is asking, I usually handle conflicts fine, but I've encountered a tricky situation with a fellow project manager. The tension seems to revolve around differing perspectives on our project timelines and responsibilities. At times, it feels like he's railroading through a project, taking over parts that I'm responsible for managing, and it's creating a bit of unease. And I'm concerned about future collaborations. What do I need to do to address this?
What do you do with a railroading bully-ish personality that you work with? I mean, a lot of people listening are dealing with that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what I do is I go to the drama triangle and I go, they're in persecutor mode. What's that triggering in me? And it is triggering typically either me feeling like a victim, it's so hard, it's unfair, right. I'm being crushed, nobody cares, or it's about a rescuer, which is like, don't fight them, just go along with them, play nice. If you be really nice, if you give up everything, maybe then they'll kind of respect you. And so first of all, I'm trying to notice my own behavior. And then I'm asking myself, what do I want here? Because until I know what I want, I don't know what feedback to give them, and I don't know what allies to call on. Because this might be one of those moments where you need to look around you and go, who are my allies here? How do I have my boss get involved? How do I have their boss get involved if it's a different person? Who else do I need on my side to help manage this? Because, I mean, the book I wrote is called How to Work with Almost Anyone.
And so not
like some people are like, yeah, exactly. Some people I'm like, man, we are going to be locking horns perpetually around this. So there is a place where you need to go. So I'm going to go off on a sidetrack here. It's like almost what's the energy I need to bring to this? Because sometimes, you know, in Native American tradition, they do an activity to begin a ceremony where they call in the directions and they call in warrior energy,
yeah,
and healing energy and teaching energy and leader energy. What energy do I need to call in to support me on this? So it's not just me versus them. And, you know, I know because I'm a person who I've had some of those stories myself. I'm like, I need to call in warrior energy. Where do I find that in me? Where do I draw lines? Where do I say, actually, stop, that's not acceptable? Where do I actually escalate conflict? Because I'm like, there needs to be a clearing fight here. That can be helpful. And then as a resource, there's an author called Leanne Davey, who's written a book called The Good Fight. And I found that's a really helpful book to help me navigate how to actually have this conflict. Because she's like, you need conflict. You need to have fights. That's actually how you make progress and you get through roadblocks. So that might be a useful tool as well.
I wonder, Michael, I mean, in that situation, because I think everybody listening is trying to say, okay, if you're not going to be the victim or the persecutor or the rescuer, what do you need to do? What's the other? Would it be appropriate for Alex to sort of sit down maybe with this person in confidentiality and say, hey, I noticed that you have a very strong personality. You're a driven person. I think that's one of the reasons that you're so successful. However, when you bring that to our dynamic, I feel myself being shut down, being sort of psychologically hijacked, being railroaded. Yeah. Not feeling like I'm invited to collaborate. I'm not a sort of person who, when I'm confronted, immediately confronts. I actually retreat in order to analyze the situation. Then it is too late for me to actually respond by the time it would be appropriate to respond. So I resent. It just brings up a lot of tension. So I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong or bad. I'm just saying it doesn't work with me. Is there a way that we can find a different kind of energy so that we can continue to work together? Or do you and I need to find a way to work with other people on this project? And does this conversation need to go beyond you and me? Maybe like that. And I would just, you know, hopefully somebody who's mature would be able to say, first of all, I didn't know that was happening. Thanks for bringing that up. Let me try to bring a different energy so that you and I work well together.
Mm.
That's going to be a low percentage group of people,
I think
can do that. Yeah. But if not, that's really great. But the other thing, if it does create even more tension, you've put your thoughts on the table and you've said, hey, we've got to deal with this as a way of kind of creating a boundary. Is that a good response for Alex, you know, not knowing how that person is going to respond, obviously?
Well, I think Alex has a choice to have that conversation or not have that conversation. And anytime you have a choice, every choice you have has prizes and punishments. So you can see that if you have that conversation, there's risk and reward to potentially having that conversation. If you don't have that conversation, if you kind of work around them somehow, there's risk and reward to that choice as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think we know enough about the situation to kind of go, it's this or that. But Alex might go, how do I weigh up what's at risk and what's as a reward in having that conversation? Don, the phrase I thought was particularly lovely in how you framed that conversation is at the very end, you said, can we figure this out between us or do we need to bring some other people in to help us with this? And what that says is, I'm going to escalate this if it needs to be escalated. So don't think that you can just fob me off or just kind of get around
this. Yeah, because bullies love to isolate.
Yeah, exactly. So it sort of says, I will call in people to help us get through this and make sure that I'm not compromised in the work that I'm doing, but I'm going to give us the best chance of figuring it out between the two of us now. And I thought that's a very nuanced way of kind of saying, I'm serious about this conversation.
Yeah. And I don't think you were, I don't think if he did it that way, I don't think he'd be saying, I'm here to punish you or I'm here for retribution. It's more, I'm here just to defend myself. And listen, man, there are a lot of people who cannot work with anybody they can't control. Because right. they're afraid. And right. you are not compatible. Most people listening to this are not compatible to work with that person. Some people are, but I particularly am not. I know really, really accomplished people who yeah. they can work with a bully all day long. And to be honest, they play them like a fiddle. they do.
Exactly.
And I am not that guy. I'm like, I don't know how to play a bully. I really don't. I get triggered. So I'm just like, hey, are you going to continue to be that? If so, we got to go. We just work with other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael, this has been a lovely conversation, and if anybody wants to know more and truly become more sort of emotionally intelligent at work, Michael Bungay Stanier has a bunch of best-selling books, The Coaching Habit, How to Work with Almost Anyone. He's been a friend of mine for a while, and I'm grateful to have you on. I feel like we need to bring you on quarterly for a therapy session just to help everybody who's dealing with all this stuff. People, you know, you learn to be really good with people, you're going to go far, not just in your career, but in your own emotional health.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
It's not just your working success, it's your general happiness. Like, work happens through people. If you can build working relationships that are the best possible version of that, you're going to be happier and you're going to be more successful.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael. Will you come back?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd be flattered.
You can see how wonderful it would be to work with somebody who understood a lot of the stuff Michael has written about, talks about, helps, you know, he really helps teams that are in trouble, crisis, things falling apart. He'll go in and help those teams figure out how to resolve some of this conflict. So it was an honor to have him on the show today. But you could see how anybody who understood his stuff and had his mindset would be an incredible person to work for, would be an incredible dad, right? Would be an incredible mom, would be, you know, would just be such a better human being to be around. Let me just ask you this. You ever think about psychological safety at home? I mean, you know, we think about it a little bit in the workplace, but you ever think about it at home? Am I a psychologically safe person to be around? And that's not just a kind person or a nice person. It's a person who goes and finds out what's true and gives people the space to share their thoughts, opinions, and feelings without judgment. And I think Michael has helped us get there. I think he's, you know, that interview helped me not just at work, but at home as well. So I'm grateful for Michael's time today. Okay, at the end of every episode, as you know, I always give you a plan of action from today's coaching conversation. These are the main takeaways you can immediately implement to strengthen and grow your business. And today's plan of action is this. There are three stories that are bothering you. And you don't even know they're bothering you. You don't even know their stories. But there are. I guarantee you there are three stories that are bothering you. For instance, I've got a 2.5-year-old moving quickly toward 3. I spend about an hour with her in the morning. I spend 2 to 3 hours with her at night. I'm gone all day. I miss her deeply when I'm not with her. And I tell myself this story that I'm not getting enough time with my daughter to create connections. I don't think that's true. I get way more time with my daughter than my dad ever got with me, and so on and so on. But that is a story I'm telling myself that bothers me. And so, you know, what I need to do is go home and say, Betsy, tell myself the story, and Betsy's going to respond by saying, well, you do get a lot of time with her. Here's some other ways that I think you can create connections and those sorts of things. And go in and heal that story. You got to find out what parts of that story are true, what parts of that story are not true. Whatever parts of the story are true, we're going to take action on doing something about those things. And whatever's not true, we're going to throw out. And they're no longer, that data is no longer an influence. I love Michael's thoughts on this. What are the data? What are the feelings? What are the judgments that you're bringing to the table? But what I want to do, though, is in terms of a plan of action, is isolate three. And you can probably literally, while you're running on that treadmill, while you're driving in your car, while you're cleaning the kitchen, listening to this podcast, you can probably quickly identify one. And then there's going to be a second. And then identify three and dive into those stories and find out what's true. And then begin to heal those things. This is the only way that we're going to overcome this tension. Otherwise, we're just going to feel it and feel it and feel it. And God knows it might be enough tension that's keeping you up at night. But that tension is going nowhere unless we go to people and say, hey, I'm telling myself a story. That's your plan of action today. Find out the three stories that are bothering you the most. But also, you know what that does is it creates a habit. It creates this is what I do when there is tension. I figure out what the story is I'm telling myself, and then I dive in and I find out what's true and what I need to do to respond to what is true, what isn't true, and so forth and so on. And I love the other parts of those tools, right? How am I playing the victim? And by the way, I think, according to Michael, that's how we don't play one of those three roles, the victim, the rescuer, the persecutor. We analyze, we pull ourselves out of the screenplay, if you will, and we say, what's wrong with this story? How do we fix it to make it work? I've been looking for a way to get out of those, that Kaufman's triangle. I think it was Kaufman's triangle. I've been wondering, how do you get out of that? Because it feels like those are the only three reactions. But I never thought about sort of the researcher analytical objective view of the three roles. Which one am I playing? Why am I playing it? That's a fourth role, right? And that role has enormous amounts of agency and doesn't get hijacked. So very, very good episode. Share this with anybody who's having tension. This is the episode you send to somebody who's having tension at work. This is it. This is the problem that episode will help you solve. So send it to anybody you've talked to recently who's having some problems with that. All right, everybody. I want to thank you as always for listening to the Business Made Simple podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow yourself and your small business. See you again next week.
Want to have Don coach through your question like the ones featured in today's episode? Just go to businessmadesimple.com/podcast. Let us know what's keeping you up at night when it comes to running your business, and submit your question at businessmadesimple.com/podcast.